This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program. I'm your host, Kate Knapp, and on today's episode, we are joined by speculative fiction writer Paolo Bacigalupi. He is the author of The Wind-Up Girl, The Water Knife, and several other books. He has won the Hugo, Nebula, Locus, Compton Crook, the John W. Campbell Memorial Awards, as well as numerous international awards. Originally from Paonia, Colorado, just over Kebler Pass here in Crested Butte, his newest book, Novella, will be released next week, July 9th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, as I mentioned, you are a speculative fiction writer.
Right.
Can we start with what exactly speculative fiction is and how it's different from science fiction?
Yeah. Speculative fiction is what we say when we're trying not to say science fiction, because whenever you say the word science fiction, somebody will say, I don't read that.
Yeah.
and you sort of have this heartbroken moment where you're like, but I think my writing is valid. And yet, you know, suddenly, you know, for whatever reason, the word science fiction either conjures up images of rocket ships or Barbarella or whatever. You end up trying to find other ways to describe what you do. And so a lot of the work that I've done in the past has been speculative. It's been extrapolative. I'm thinking about the world. I'm looking at a trend, and then I'm extrapolating forward to ask what will happen if this trend becomes the most dominant trend or the most, you know, important trend. So when I wrote something like The Water Knife, it was about climate change and drought and sort of extrapolating forward and saying, what does the future look like if these things become serious and dominate, you know, our public experience. So that's really like, that's that, you know, mostly it's just sort of like trying to find different ways to try to brand yourself in some way that won't immediately put a brick wall between you and a potential reader. So that's really it. And interestingly, now that I'm writing something very, very different, I'm finding that same exact kind of odd wall, which is that, you know, now I say, oh, I'm writing a fantasy novel, and people are like, oh, fantasy. I mean, and, you know, and they're like, I don't read that. And actually, like, there was another period in my life when I was writing for young adults. And again, that same, you know, and it's interesting. It's just sort of like, you're just like, well, just let me get you a little further into the story before you decide you aren't interested. It might be interesting. It might be valid. And, you know, maybe it's like people either think that you aren't serious or that you aren't saying interesting things or that you aren't doing good artistic work, or you know there's a certain literary snobbery that sometimes happens where it's there's all sorts of different things that kind of happen, and you're like, I seem to go from genre to genre, all of which are sort of like considered lowbrow, and yet you're like, I think that I'm trying to do good, valid, interesting work, and I think maybe you might like it too, who knows.
Yeah.
You know, give it a shot anyway. So yeah.
No, I love that you pointed that out, because a lot of times, like you said, it's like literature with a capital L.
Right.
And science fiction and fantasy is somehow not a part of that.
Right. Which hilariously, like when I was growing up, my stepmother used to try to force me to read literature with a capital L, and all I read was science fiction, and every once in a while she would like be like, you can't read another science fiction book until you read John Steinbeck or something. And I just was like, oh, this is killing me. So, you know, I guess in my own case too, it's like literature, I don't read that.
So as you mentioned, your most recent book, Novella, is fantasy.
Yeah.
Okay. And this has been in the works for many years. The thing that kind of intrigued me the most was that you described this story as a secret project that you kept to yourself. What motivated you to share this with readers?
Masochism. it was a secret project. I started working on this. So I'd been writing a lot about the environment and climate change were the major focuses of the work that I'd been doing before. And it was pretty heavy stuff. It was oftentimes those were either depressing or disturbing stories that were pretty overwhelming. And there was a point where I realized that my sort of personal anxieties about the world were playing out also inside of my fiction. And so you're basically, you're anxious in your regular life, and then you go into your creative life and you're also very anxious. And this turns out to be a terrible recipe for mental health. I laugh about it now, but I actually completely crashed out. I completely burned out. I kind of had this, you know, nervous breakdown kind of thing. And it was ugly. And I had to kind of dig myself out of a hole. And one of the things that I did to dig myself out of that hole was to try to reconnect with what I loved about writing, what I cared about with writing. And so Novela started as a very much just sort of an experiment where I would just sit down and I would just give myself permission to write anything at all for 500 words, and then I would walk away for the day. And it was just to show up, touch the page, walk away, show up again, touch the page, walk away. And there was a line in the book that became the book, but initially it was just a single line, and it became the first line of the overall story. And it was, my father kept a dragon eye on his desk. Mm. And there was something energetic about that line that was, it opened up questions for me. It's like, oh, wait, who is this father? Who is this man who keeps a dragon eye on his desk? And suddenly you're like, wait a second, who's this kid who's observing this man? And what is their relationship? And what is, how do you end up with a dragon eye? Did you, what, you know? And so suddenly those questions then become story. And they was very sort of organically explored for me because I wasn't expecting to publish this. In fact, I was sort of thinking I wasn't going to be a real writer anymore. I didn't really want to be a published writer anymore. And so there was just a process of exploration. And so the story sort of started to open up. Oh, this is this immensely powerful merchant banker. It's going to be this, oh, they live in this Italianate sort of Renaissance-like world with all sorts of like lush art on the walls and the frescoes and stuff. And they're porticos and their colonnades and their piazzas and their palazzos and things, and this is how this dragon eye came to rest upon the father's desk, as he bought it from a, you know, it's a essentially a looted stolen object, but the kid can sense that this eye is still alive, and there's sort of a story attached to the eye that there's the soul of the dragon is still locked inside of it, and so that was kind of the beginning of the whole thing. But yeah, it stayed as a secret project for years. I mean, years and years. And then, but it kept growing and it kept expanding and kept growing and kept expanding. And then there was this point where it became just enormous. and I sort of looked at it and was like, well, I might have not intended to be a writer anymore, but I've certainly written. And so I sort of cut a piece of it off and said, okay, that's a book. That looks like book one. Yeah. And I took it to my agent, and he sold it almost immediately. He loved it. He sent it to my editor. They bought it. It was all a very quick process. And then suddenly I'm back in the game.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a long answer to a short question. Like, yeah.
No, I love it. So you mentioned this book is a bit different from others you've published in the past. Novela is described as a combination of Renaissance Italy, The Godfather, and Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love this. The main character, Davico, is about to take the reins of power as the heir to a wealthy merchant baking family, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
What can people expect when they pick up your book? Will there be dragons? Will there be fantasy elements?
The story centers around this young boy, Davico de Reguli, and he is the heir to the de Reguli banking family. His father, Devonacci, is both a very powerful and very sort of scheming figure. The man not only has immense amounts of wealth, and he, you know, sort of the things they say is that, you know, his family can, you know, buy armies, they can sell cities, they're this sort of powerful. And his father also controls all of the politics of the city of Novela, where they live. But it's all from behind the scenes. It's always, you know, sort of through influence, through buying of influence, through favors, through the collection of promises, is what the father says. The saying about Devonacci de Reguli is that he made his wealth in trade, but more in promises, and he never failed to collect. And then there's this boy, and Davico is sort of the opposite of his father. Davico is a very sweet person. He's a very kind kid, and he's more comfortable hanging out with his dog named Lazy or his pony named Stub, and he's sweet, and yet he's expected to try to learn, you know, the rules of their banking family and the way that they act in the world, and he's expected to take the reins of power, and that gap between who Davico is you know, in his soul versus what's necessary for him to take on in his role as a son of this family, there's a vast gap between those things. And so that's where, you know, the tension of the story lies. But yeah, that, and then, you know, yeah, there's this dragon eye, this fossilized dragon eye, and it looks like this sort of a comet almost is what it looks like. It's really just this teardrop shaped thing where, you know, it's got the central eye, but then it's got all these long trailing sort of ocular nerves off of the back of it that are all very sharp, like daggers, and it's malevolent. And Davico can sense it, and Davico has a very strong sense that the dragon eye is there, and it's kind of observing them. And that ends up playing also a part in the overall story.
Yeah. Wow. And so, being from Paeonia, you split your time between Paeonia and Crested Butte, and you've affectionately been called a localish author.
Perfect, yeah.
And you've written about the Southwest and Colorado before. How does place influence your newest book?
So there's a whole aspect. So this story, there's a whole conflict inside of the story about two ideas. And I because the story is so big and I started creating an entire culture, an entire world, there's also these philosophies that people have. And so they have a philosophy about the world, which is that there are two parts of it. Or this one particular philosopher has a philosophy that says there are two parts of the world. And one of them is Cambios and one of them is Firmos. And Firmos is all of the things that are of the natural world, the things that Virga, another goddess, wove into the world. And so those are the trees, those are the animals, those are the flowers, those are, you know, all of the, you know, everything from the worms in the ground to the birds in the sky, that kind of thing. And then there's Cambios. And Cambios is the realm of human beings. It's the realm of wagon wheels and axles and, you know, castles and banking and things like that. And these things are fairly separated. And Davico is drawn very much to Firmos, to the natural world. And so outside of the city of Navila, there's a huge wilderness, and it's called the Romelia. And Davico likes to go out into this wilderness. And this wilderness is entirely modeled on the forests, the aspen forests around, you know, up on Kepler and stuff like that, where you have these giant living organisms, basically, and they're all interwoven with one another. And so there's these trees called white bark, and the white bark actually, they turn red, their bark, their actual trunks turns red as their leaves turn gold in the fall. And so I created a more sort of fantastical version of the aspen forest. But like a lot of these things about the wilderness, you know, they were modeled on both my experiences growing up in this area, hiking and climbing in the West Elks, coming over here, all that kind of stuff. And so it's all interlaced. You know, when you're a writer, you're always sort of harvesting from your own personal experiences. And all of the time that I spent growing up, my father was a mountain climber, and so I grew up climbing with him. And so all of that ends up getting inserted into the material that you work on and create.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about this world-building effort, and it's a lot more than just, like, the setting or the place. You know, there's the myths and the legends and all of that. How did you kind of go about creating all of this?
When I was creating this, I was thinking entirely about, if something is curious to me or interesting to me, I'm going to pursue it. And so, you know, I knew I had a template. There was a template of, I liked Renaissance Italy as a concept. I had been reading a lot of history books anyway about that period. And so there was a lot of stuff that was in my head already. So I liked the aesthetic. But I mean, and this is the fun of fantasy, is that I don't want to write the history of Italy again. It's already been done. I don't need that. But I would love to steal a story about merchant banking. And, you know, I could do it a Medici adjacent thing that's even crazier than the Medici's, you know. Yeah. And so, but as I was building the story, there would be all of these moments where suddenly I would get fascinated by some idea. So there's an early section in the book where Davico has a friend named Maestro Della Cavallo, who's a physician, and Davico will go off into the wilderness with this physician, and they're hunting for herbs and mushrooms and things like that for healing salves and things like that. And so I'm like, okay, well, we're definitely going to like just start listing the different kinds of plants that are available and what they do and how they heal people. And, you know, we're going to do a whole nerdy part about just that. And then at another moment, I'm going along and I'm really fascinated by the idea that You know, this is a whole peninsula of different city-states, and I'm fascinated about how people talk about foreigners, people who are foreign to them, and how they stereotype one another and stuff. And so everybody on the peninsula, on the Cerulean Peninsula where this story takes place, all of the city-states, they all stereotype one another in all sorts of terrible ways. And so the Navalese people, who is where Davico comes from, the Navalese people are always thought to be twisted. And so there's sayings that they're very twisty, they're very sharp, they're very good at business, but they're very untrustworthy. And so they'll say that the Navalese are as twisted as the plaits of their women's hair, or they're as twisted as their alleys, or, you know, things like that. And then the Borghese people from another city, they say, oh, their hearts are blacker than their velvet. And then it's just in each particular case, there's a stereotype about that particular place, that the Borghese are violent, that the Navalese are twisted, that the Torre-Amanese people are debauched, you know, and all of these people then talk garbage about one another across the way. So as you meet different people, they'll all say nasty things about one another, and it's just fun. And so suddenly you're building this world. And does this actually play into the story? Sort of, but mostly it's just a lot of fun. And and that was sort of the guiding principle for me as I worked on the entire story, was if it entertains me, I'm going to write it.
Yeah, yeah. I can definitely see a parallel to these communities as well, where we're resort communities, we're tourism-based economies,
right.
And we see all these different people and have our own stereotypes.
Right, yeah, yeah, no, it's very natural, it's very human. Like when I was living in China for a while, and you'd be living in Beijing, and then the Beijing people would talk all kinds of terrible things about the Shanghai people, and then you get down to Shanghai, and the Shanghai people are like, how did you ever live with the Beijing people? Those people are truly terrible. And then you go over to Chengdu, and you're hanging out with the Sichuan people, and the Sichuanese are saying things like, oh, the Beijing people, they don't even know what tea is. All they do is drink jasmine tea, and it ruins the quality of tea, and, you know, you're going around. And you see that play out everywhere, and, you know, here it's like, oh, the Texans, oh, no, whatever. Yeah, you know, it's the same stuff, and, you know, it's very human.
So, okay, final question. This is for all the book lovers out there who are already dying to know. Will Navala lead to a series? You mentioned that this was a portion of what you had written. Will we see more?
Oh, yeah. No, this is a monster. I've created a monster. It really is a huge book. And what happened was that as it grew, there were more storylines, and there was this shocking moment where I'd written, I think probably in the initial draft, I had probably 200,000 words, which is twice the size already of an average book. And I looked at what I had and I said, okay, well, if I chop it here at about 110,000 words, that looks like maybe about the first third of the story, maybe. And then as I started revisions on that, then that became 190,000 words, just that one portion. And so then there's all this other material, though, that I had to, like, sort of truncate off. And it is just the direct continuation of the story. There's just so much of it you couldn't bind it into a single volume regardless. And so, yeah, it's going to be, it's going to be keeping me busy at least for another couple of years.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to hear that because I love a good series.
No,
to
good.
Become
They're
addicted
perfect.
To.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
What else would you like readers to know about your upcoming book?
What would I like? You know, I want them to, well, I mean, there's two things. I mean, as an author, like, you're going out in the world, and first you're just like, please read my book. Oh, you just sound so desperate. But there is this funny thing is that, I'm changing gears quite a lot from what I did before. And I think we have, it's very, very interesting because when I was doing this work that was related to the environment, that was climate fiction, that was sort of extrapolating on current, you know, sort of either political environment, you know, technology trends, stuff like that. I think there was a portion of that that made people feel like you were a kind of quote serious author. Mm. And certainly when I was doing promotion for The Water Knife, you know, I was going out and people would be like, oh, this is an important book. This is, and therefore it's relevant. You know, it's like, books are only good if they're relevant, or books are only good if they're good for you, or books are, you know, it's a weird sort of bias that we have. And it's strangely, its focus seems to be focused entirely on books. Nobody complains if a television show isn't good for you. You're like, I liked this.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to move now into a story that was written specifically for story's sake. I think that there are themes and lines inside of that that are interesting. But this is a story for story's sake and for entertainment's sake. It was written to entertain myself and give myself joy, and hopefully it gives other people joy. But there is this sort of feeling, like, for me as a writer, moving from one space to the next, where you're like, I know that you thought I was, quote, serious, but I'm very seriously doing entertainment right now, and I'd like you to kind of come along with me and try this out, too.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're going to be sad at the end of it. I think you're going to be delighted, but, you know, who knows? But that's, I think that those are the kinds of things, though, that as an author, especially as you're just about to bring a book out into the world where you put a lot of work into it and stuff, and you're sort of offering it out to the world, you worry and you think, well, I hope it finds a home. I hope it finds a home in somebody's, you know, heart.
Yeah. So has your wife read this book?
She has.
Okay.
Yeah, she read a draft. She hasn't seen the finished version. She read an earlier draft and gave me some notes on it. And there was, it was really funny because as she was reading it, there would be these, I would know kind of, I'd be like, so what's happening right now? And she'd say, you know, tell me what was happening with this character or whatever. And I'd be like, huh, okay, I know where she is and I know what's coming next. And there was this one particular moment, and when readers get to it, they know they've gotten to it. And I knew it was coming. And she was sitting in the living room and I was sitting in the kitchen and I was just waiting. And it was like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I was like, it's coming, it's coming. And then she says, oh, Paolo, no. And I was like, she got to it. All right, excellent. And there was just a big shock twist in the story. And I was delighted, you know, it hit exactly the way that I'd been hoping, and, you know, running it, being able to watch it in real time like that was quite fun.
So, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and joining us today.
Yeah, you
it's
bet.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And Saturday, July 13th, you can join Paolo at Townie Books in the town of Crested Butte. This is from 7 to 9 p.m. to celebrate his newest novel, Novella. You can also learn more about Paolo at windupstories.com, and you can pre-order the book through Townie Books in Crested Butte. Townie Books is an underwriter for KBUT. You are listening to Community Matters, KBUT's local affairs program, heard every other Monday at 4 p.m. I am your host, Kate Knapp. Thanks for tuning in, and don't go anywhere. We have got Rocky Mountain Community Radio's regional roundup coming up in just a few minutes.